last weekend after our church service, I went and did something that I was at the very beginning of. And Diane, I already was texting with Diane Lynn this morning. Diane is a ceramic artist who makes just stunning pieces. I know there are many artists among us. Maybe some of you have also dabbled or worked with clay. Well, I never had. And oh my goodness, I did not know what I was up for. Diane had assured me this morning that clay is as therapeutic as it is art and science. And I so know I will. I know I will if I keep trying. But trying something new requires the body to learn new shapes. And I learned right away that if you try pottery, you actually have to try, you have to be extremely close to the wheel, uncomfortably close, just awkwardly close. If it's new for you, this is a strange position to put oneself in. And then, Diane, I apologize. I may be really messing up these instructions, but then you have to make sort of Tyrannosaurus Rex arms in which you're bent over and then the hands come together to create stability and driving the elbows into the body to build tension in order to make these small but essential movements in the clay. If you go past a certain point, the bowl can, or well, for me, it was a bowl, can spin out and warp. And then the results of this practice are not necessarily felt immediately. There's always this possibility of failure or brokenness, but all is not lost. My teacher kept assuring me more than once, I needed it, that there is always more clay in the back of the studio. To get started, you throw this piece of clay onto the wheel, literally. And then by slow adjustments around, you notice how it feels, sounds, moves, to know if it is centered around itself and on the wheel. 70% or more, I remember the teacher telling me, is about touch and sensation rather than what it looks like. We're doing this work of pottery with our touch. And with practice, we may improve the speed by which we can make a good bowl, the sophistication with which you can make other types of intricate pieces. But most importantly, your hands begin to sense themselves in the clay and the clay's response. In neurobiology, we would call this interoception. Interoception, the noticing of sensations. And like pottery, it definitely improves with practice, how we notice sensation. Now, this was my first try. I'm an adult, and the teacher convinced me that it wasn't too late for me to learn this art form. Though I am still skeptical about my own abilities to grasp this, it has nothing to do with being an adult and beyond some point of learning. Thankfully, in the 1990s, neuroscientists really lightened up their pessimism about the learning that our adult human brains do in our lifetimes. They found that instead of being fixed and unable to learn, our human brains rewire and change in response to our repeated experiences with every sensory input, body movement, reward, signal, thought, emotion, stress arousal, or association between stimulus and response. Just as the young can do new things, adults too, we can repair damage to our brains, perform new tasks, grow new neurons, and grow new neural networks. Like a good ceramic artist, building that habit of moving into that position, the posture begins to feel more possible, and the body just develops the muscle habits it needs to repeat. we can see our habits stick. This is neuroplasticity at work. The repetition of any experience makes it easier to do and harder not to do again. It is true that I found the learning of this new art form both enjoyable and a little overwhelming. Maybe you can think of something in your own life that is exciting and difficult at the same time. Each of us comes with bodies that are designed really to process some types of overwhelming experiences. And of course, in the other direction from those pleasures are the habits we may wish we didn't have, including the habits that come from prolonged stress, trauma, depression, or anxiety. There are habits that can be incredibly burdensome because trauma is something different. Trauma is those experiences that diminish our ability to feel safe in our bodies, in the world, and connected to ourselves, others, the earth, or spirit. It could take the form of personal, individual threats to our well-being, vicarious or secondary traumas that our work or caretaking or relationships expose us to, as well as the social traumas like oppression, like this pandemic. Trauma shows up in our body as contraction. I know this is something that I've said before with you. Whenever we feel threatened, including when something traumatic is happening to us or the people we love, the limbic or reptilian areas of our brain activate our automatic survival strategies of fight, flight, freeze, appease, or dissociate. The body narrows in on what will keep us alive, and that focus makes complete sense. As the threat appraisal repeats, our bodies can become stuck in the strategies that helped us survive during those most crucial moments. These practices are embodied or have been trained into our psychobiology over time. They are habits or competencies, some useful, others not. As Stacey Haynes, one of my somatics teachers, writes, while we've inherited a Cartesian worldview and an objectifying science framework here in the West, we are actually not mind over matter. That idea of if I only think differently, I'll be differently. Nor are we matter over mind or spirit. A change in chemistry or medication will wholly change our experience. Rather, we are all of these things combined. We are thinking and conceptual. We are emotional. We are biological, we are spiritual, we are relational, and we are social. So one thing I want to say about our neurobiology in relation to trauma is it can be something like inviting ourselves into Medusa's lair. Now, one of the things that's important to say is that we're not going to have those experiences here in the service. We're approaching them from the side, coming in with shields into the lair with skills and tools. And here's one tool. I'd like you to notice where you're supported by your chair, maybe the contact on your back, maybe at the back of your legs, maybe you're on a couch and the nice soft cushion holding your sit bones. And then notice your feet on the floor, supported by the earth. Maybe if you can't notice it completely, maybe you can give it your toes a little wiggle, just a little tiny movement. And then lastly, notice your hands and their placement. Are they on your lap, resting on your thighs, next to you, holding hands with your beloved? And then of these three, the support of our chair and our back body, feet on the floor, or our hands. Pick which of those three gives you the most feeling of contact. Maybe one of them feels the strongest. And if you don't feel any of those places quite well enough, you can try adjusting or swiping or shaking like we did. We're not judging it. We have a set of choices between whether our back, our feet, or our hands draws our attention. Great. Now I'd like you to turn to a window in your own space. Hopefully one that moves vertically up and down. You don't need to go into a different room to do that. If it doesn't go up and down, that's okay. We can use our imaginations. And I bet each of us has a slightly different window in our home. Some may open really wide. Some stick on the way up or the way down. Maybe some have felt the smoke or ash of nearby fires. Maybe some of your windows are recently cleaned. Maybe some are really never opened at all or just a crack. So we can imagine together that this is our window of tolerance for our experiences. When our window is open, there's a middle path between two extremes. The space in which our energy and breath passes comfortably. When we're inside our window of tolerance, we're more equipped to tolerate the full range of our daily experience. Our arousal might naturally ebb and flow, and we might be more likely to feel alert, relaxed, engaged. And if we imagine at the top of that window and up above it, where life might feel a little over the top, a little turbulent and unstable, maybe a little out of control or hyper. When we're hyper aroused, we tend to be oversensitive to sensations or sounds, maybe hyper vigilant to our surroundings, to experiencing high emotional reactivity. And maybe below our window, we can also imagine another space, a hypo aroused state, where life is stagnant, fixed, and we tend to feel stuck. Sense of sensation, even apathy, a dullness. Now, being in a hyper or hypo-arousal state isn't bad or wrong. They're actually really important to our survival. And this spiritual tools of neurobiology when we're talking about surviving trauma. It's literally what made it possible for us to get here today, to this moment. If there's a layer of shame or pain or grief around our trauma, that too is protecting us. It has served a purpose in our aliveness. They're organically important states of being. Our ancestors had a neurobiology too that was designed to locate and survive immediate mortal threats. We're hardwired for these short bursts of survival and recovery that allow for longer term tasks like healing, growing, sharing. Our survival brain will process what's happening from the bottom up by scanning our environment for opportunities and avoiding threats. If you've ever seen a group of deer eating in a field and taking turns of who's looking and who's snacking, it's just like that. It's fast. And it bypasses the part of our mind that's responsible for analyzing or reasoning or making conscious decisions. We may not always know exactly what kicks our survival brain into gear, but we see its effects in our emotional and our physiological states. Maybe when you felt in one of those hyper or hypo states, you felt that wobbliness, shivers, or buzzy. In other situations, maybe a iciness or disconnected, some sort of sensation in your own body. All of us living lives that our ancestors could not have imagined, can widen that window within which our thinking brain and our survival brain work together cooperatively. And we can even intentionally now, in this space on Zoom, return to those points of contact that help those parts of our mind-body system work together. Whether our feet, our back body, or the place where our hands meet, that place of contact. So for myself, as someone with complex post-traumatic stress disorder, I've been working consciously for quite a long while on my own awareness of these things. Not on stop, don't do that, go back to my window, but that awareness of where I am allows me to be able to practice being in my window of tolerance on purpose. When practicing widening our window with intention, we can learn to use our awareness to regulate ourselves, access more choices. When we're in our window, we're in a zone where our eyesight will feel clear. You can know you're there if you feel a full breath. And we can feel those points of contact. We can regain contact with those points we talked about anytime. And it can help us get back or clue us in if we need to move, if we need to shake or swipe. To be in our window or to widen it, we learn how to apply the brakes or cut through the mental fog that is a part of living a life in this world. So let's go back intentionally to that point of contact once more that we found at the beginning. Exaggerate it, sort of like when you're looking at a starry sky and you can see recognize a constellation and just notice each little place of connection between the stars. We're going to notice that place of contact. And take one or two slow breaths. Maybe you can notice even where you are in your own window right now. Where you might plot yourself on that window on your home. If the bottom, if zero is a hyperarousal or numbed out. Moving all the way up to 10, being hyper aroused or agitated. When we're curious about what our body's activities have been taking care of, if support that shaping in the direction it's going, we can leave open the possibility for change and safety. Change where you are in your window right now, just notice it. Can blend with what tightness might come. Pausing there, knowing that the pressures, history, emotions, and energy inside of us deserves to be felt, held, processed, and even completed. Remember that 70% of working with clay is sensing through touch. Maybe your point of contact would like a little movement, or more of a steady presence. I'm going to leave you with one final practice. An embodied response to what's arising in our bodies right now, but also something you can take with you or try on as we're moving collectively in this confusing time into direction of justice. Recovering the heart of democracy and caring for one another during this pandemic and caring for our personal traumas that are embedded within a broader social fabric. Our bodies, like clay, were built for change and growth. So these kinds of resources are right here for us to tap in to the vitality and resilience that are held within us. like you to feel the floor below you. Give your lower body a chance to come into gravity. And if that feels hard to access, try tensing up a little bit. And then imagining as you release the tension, just imagining your skin just spreading out over your muscles. We center in our bodies because we need our bodies to practice release and creativity in response to what we've survived or to our conditioned responses, to make choices and find new ways of being. Staying present with your sensation, find your center with a hand, dropping your attention just below your belly button. Want to identify inside ourselves our capacity for openness, training our weight to come down into gravity, and finding our length by sweeping down and up, lengthening, coming into our full length, whether we're seated or standing. We need our anxious energy to have a way out of the body, to flow through to our feet, through our hands, and up through our head. In this way, we're also practicing a sense of dignity. Find that inside your body now. Where can you feel or find a sense of dignity, even faintly? Go ahead and take a look at others in your gallery view. Let yourself appreciate one another's dignity, grounding in our first principle, recognizing worth and dignity as inherent. And then from that, we can widen from the inside out. We can spread out across our chest and from our lower back and widen our stance or width of our hips, noticing the width of our breath and our rib cage, letting it fill side to side. And start to unfurl our wingspan, reacquainting with our personal space, the boundaries behind and in front of us. Inside our width, we are still relational. We can bring our attention out to one another and back in. We both belong here in this community and have our own space. Our bodies can hold the contradictions as we do our own inner work. Grounded in self-love, we can widen our empathy, accountability, expanding, widening towards something or someone else that we care about. When things get hard, we can return to our width. We can also find in ourselves a depth, placing a hand at our back and in front of us. Try to expand your depth with me. Make more room there. When we have an intense experience that's within our window of tolerance, we can find space and movement in our depth. Part of our search for truth and meaning as a people of faith is our dedication to our own growing in a world begging for our presence. So we will each need more depth, more space for that aliveness to realize our longing. Our depth is here for us anytime we feel like, whoa, this was a lot. Because even within that challenge, we can return to depth, return to the pragmatic place in our bodies that is holding and protecting our center. Let's take a breath into our depth and center in what matters to us, our commitment and being here in community. What matters to you? What are we longing to be as a congregation? Our length, width, and our depth are a loving reminder of what we're longing to become. We move the clay around the wheel subtly and gently to find our center through sensation and touch. We know there are communities and ancestors who for centuries have known what embodied healing is and articulated it in similar and different ways to how I've described today. our ancestors knew about the power of feeling, sensing, and action. And the landscape of our own spirits is deeper and broader than we may even have words for. To heal our community, to heal our country, we must journey within our own healing. May we each be reminded that we are worthy of safety, belonging, and love.